This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Oral. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck wasn't his
name? Lizmark.
Lizmark. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big butts play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the things.
I think they might hit a... shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
our
favorite. Opener.
To do worse than Josh Richards. I made a backflip, heard a few chicks scream. My arm shook, couldn't look, gave another squeeze, heard it click. Yo, my shit is stuck, tried to cock it, it wouldn't shoot, now I'm in danger. Finally pulled it back and saw three bullets caught up in the chamber. So now I'm jetting to the building lobby, and it was full of children, probably couldn't see as high as I be. It's like the game ain't the same, got younger niggas. The triggers bringing fame to their name and claim some corners. Cruise without Place de la Nacion.
Welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host Justin Rosero, coming to get you live here on this Monday evening. And Scott Criscola, we're not going to waste any time with pleasantries. It fucking snowed. It snowed a lot. It's been a long weekend. It's been Valentine's Day. You and Triple H went to dinner. But we have a hell of a show to talk about tonight, and I don't think we should kill any time talking about your romantic evening with the guy. Talking about the chocolates you gave him, shaped like Heartbreak Kid.
Yep.
Hearts.
He grew his hair out, and Stephanie shaved hers, apparently based on the picture you sent me.
Yes, it's now hanging in your living room.
Yes. Yes, JR, the weather sucks. Everything sucks.
I want to talk about the editable arrangement of panties that he got you in the mail.
Bananas. And welcome.
I want to talk about Ric Flair filming that very special movie.
Very special movie. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to episode 363. Of the Place to Be podcast, and it is a, of course,
we'll talk about
Monday
Triple
night.
H pinning you to the ground and making his own St. Valentine's Day Massacre video.
Oh, Jesus. yeah. Okay.
We'll talk about the bicycle shorts.
Dyed pink. Jesus, stop it.
Okay.
The bicycle shorts. He wishes he could fit in a shirt, but never mind. All right. It is Monday. It is President's Day. Hope everyone enjoyed their long weekend, regardless of where you live.
Hope everyone honored Martin Van Buren accordingly.
Yes, Martin Van Buren, John Tyler, and
William Henry Harrison. I made a topical president's
That's
joke.
That's funny. I said one Harrison, you said the other.
Benjamin. Yes? I made a topical president's joke today. My wife, who's like 38 months pregnant, I mean, 38 months, Jesus Christ, feels like it's been 38 months. 38 weeks. 38 weeks pregnant, is wearing this like giant coat that her coworker gave her. And I mean, it's like even big on her at this point. And so I said, you look like William Howard Taft walking around the house with that this giant coat on. It's just like a big overcoat. So there you go. Topical perfect. Presidential humor on this President's Day.
Very nice. Very nice.
It went well. Went over
yes.
Okay.
Good. Well, it is episode 363, and it is Monday, which means we are in the big steel box, and it is a very, very special show tonight, JR. It's about as long as a snowstorm, too, but... Mm-hmm. But anyway, let's dive in. We have a very rare special guest joining us. We don't do this very often during the vaults anymore, but this is a special dispensation because this gentleman was with us on that.
Well, and it's also like we've talked about, it's pretty much limited to staff members of PlaceToBeNation.com
right,
at this point.
True.
This guy, he may not buy it. Well, actually, he's been pretty active lately, so he's back in business. Yep. But yes, you're right. He was there with us in person that night, and that is Mr. Mark Clare. How are you, sir? You Lion of Liberty, you.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up, guys? Sorry, that was just my that's my alarm. That was just going off telling me it's time to be on The Place to Be. It's great to be here.
Those are nice gold shorts you have on right now.
I think the one reference is the one article you've written for PlaceToBeNation.com, but you're here.
Oh, come on. I've already wrote a part two of my latest.
That's right. You're active. Very active now.
It's a good song. It gets me revved up. It gets me in the mood that I need to be in to join you guys for this stupendously long show.
Yes.
Hey, what is going on here?
Look, you know, I know everybody breaks, you know, Google, that I give this guy a lot of crap for, you know, how big he is. But let's be honest. We saw that Saved by the Bell skit. Good Lord. Oh, now we know why Screech and Lisa Turtle didn't show up. Good Lord.
I don't know.
All I could think was how great everyone looked, and then Belding shows up, and I go, ooh.
He's battling Chevy Chase to see who was going to be the next assassin at the WCW reunion pay-per-view.
Oh, my God. Yes. Who could fit into a mask seven sizes too small?
I'd like to see a trio's mask with Jack Victory, Chevy Chase, and Belding as the assassins. Assassins four through six, actually.
Anyway, tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, we're heading to where it all begins. ... Again. And we don't have the open. Tonight, we don't need an open, Jesus.
No, we don't have to talk about it.
Waste more time. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, myself, my PIC, and the loquacious Mr. Claire give you WrestleMania 20.
And
Double
herpes,
X.
Chris Golo. We give you herpes, too.
Double X.
Yeah, who could believe it? The night finally arrived, March 14th, 2004, Scott. And I think we've chronicled our friendship to this point. Mm-hmm. You and I had become friendly in August 2003. And by this point, I had our buddy Charlie Houle supposed to attend the show with us, but he ended up, I forget how it worked out the timing, but he was going to England, basically, for a vacation. And was not going to be able to attend the show. So his ticket was up for grabs. And of course, it was down to you and Dr. G. I let you two battle it out. You came out victorious, so you joined me, my buddy, of course, Adam Murray of the NBA Team Podcast, our buddy Jim Price. Mm-hmm. And then this gentleman with his long flowing locks and his buddy joined us as well. So we had six of us.
They were not flowing then.
No, they were cropped tight.
Cropped tight, yes.
Claire, we had become friends back in, late 2002 when we started at Ascent Media.
Yeah, I think you started like a month or two after me, and at some point, I think I might have found you watching Raw in the ingest area.
Yeah,
and,
it happened quick.
The rest is history.
I think it happened quick that we found out because
when you find a wrestling buddy at work, I mean, you got to latch on to that because it's kind of rare.
Well, especially from you were from the area, right? But for me, I knew like nobody, so to find someone that was new in the company.
Yeah, I was living with my parents at the time, post-college kind of deal. So, yeah, it was like I grew up about 45 minutes outside of Stanford where we worked.
Right. So, for me not knowing anyone and finding a wrestling buddy, a Yankee buddy, someone that was new to the job. So, it was like I latched on immediately. I know that. And I mean, we went to like a SmackDown.
Never let go.
Never. We went to a SmackDown as early as early 2003. So, I think we found out the wrestling connection pretty
quick.
Was
that the one where I was smoking like next to like 5-year-olds in the
yes.
aisle?
Yeah, that would be the one. You were hammered beyond belief.
That surprised me.
Tipping 20s for hot dogs and then dropping them on the ground and everything else. Yes.
Good hot dog. I mean,
that was a lot of fun.
It's worked hard.
So it was a no-brainer for you to join us here, of course. I think we met in the city. We went to, Applebee's, right, Scott, for dinner?
It was either Applebee's or
Mayo's
Fridays.
Yeah, it was one of the two.
It was TGIF or Applebee's. It was one of those.
I think it was Applebee's.
I think it was Applebee's. Yeah.
The one right in Times Square, I think. We went to Times Square, went to Applebee's, and then went over to MSG for the big show. A lot of excitement, a lot of hype around this one. So, obviously, we've been here before, right, Scott? Madison Square Garden, so we don't need to.
Yes, March 14th, 2004, the earliest, date-wise, the earliest WrestleMania in WWE history. This supplants WrestleMania 18, which was on March 17th. So this is the earliest WrestleMania ever, and it probably will be the earliest WrestleMania ever. Live, of course, from the home office, Madison Square Garden in New York City. We have not been here since the last time you were in this building, JR.
That's right.
The 2002 Survivor Series. This was my first, not only my first WrestleMania, but my first ever wrestling show in this building. So it was a very, very memorable night for me to be in the home office. I had plenty of concerts and Knicks game, but never here for an Ranger game, but never here for a wrestling show. Your attendance, pretty awesome as always, 19,689. Less than 20, probably because of the huge set. Usually, this is probably the first pay-per-view where they didn't come out the side like old school. They actually had an actual set, and it was, you know, had right. like the big skyline, the glowing stage with all the lights and everything. So, the buy rate, pretty amazing, 1.59. Go ahead.
Of course. No, so I was going to give you guys a little trivia, see how close you were paying attention. Three Ooh, sponsors.
Is this a trivia tournament starting up again?
Yeah, right here. So
it's our qualifier.
And you get to win.
It's the qualifying
winner,
round
winner
right
faces
now.
Schmuck.
Qualifying round right now. So three sponsors on this night all began with the same letter. Did you guys pay close enough attention to remember any of them? I know Claire's answer.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, just skip me.
Yep, pass. No.
Oh, God. Probably Magic.
Nope. All right, not that important. It was Snickers, Subway, and Stacker 2.
Wow.
Stacker 2. I forgot about Stacker 2.
So Subway, eat Subway, eat Snickers, and then go on Stacker 2.
Perfect diet right
that's
there.
That's your day.
There you go.
Planned out by WWE.
So there were two theme songs. You guys remember either of those?
Absolutely not.
Well, I remember the Drowning Pool one.
Yes. Do you know right? the name?
Never Gonna Stop. I don't know what it's called.
Step
Never
up.
Gonna Stop. Never Gonna Stop.
Yeah, it was Step Up.
Their version's better. Pool.
And Touche by Godsmack was apparently the other one.
Yeah, it's like the fifth Godsmack song that was a pay-per-view.
Right? That man, Drowning Pool. All right, so here's your champions.
They're all the same band to me.
just to finish up, your announcers, of course, the Raw right. brand. Not in the catacombs. They actually are at ringside. Good old JR, Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler. And, of course, for the blue brand, SmackDown, Michael Cole and Taz and the Spanish announce team. So for the first time, you actually had three table. Well, I guess not for the first time, but actually seeing it on camera, three broadcast tables all right next to each other. So there we go. Time now, JR, yes, for the Sutton Report.
Yeah, all right. So let's go through our championship roll call here. Eddie Guerrero is your WWE champion. Triple H is your World Heavyweight Champion. Randy Orton, still your Intercontinental Champion. Big Show, still your U.S. Champion. We have new World Tag Team Champions on the Raw side. Booker T and Rob Van Dam.
What?
Yes, defeated Evolution on the 216 edition of Raw. That was Ric Flair and Batista, of course, from Bakersfield, California. Scotty Tuhati Rikishi, still your blah SmackDown Tag Team Champions. Chavo Guerrero, still your Cruiser Champion. And Victoria is now your Women's Champion. Defeated
what?
Molly Holly as part of a Fatal 4-Way match on the 223 Raw. Also featured Jazz and Lita from Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay.
Raw passed 563 episodes. SmackDown, 239. 88 TNA pay-per-views in the books. There was no heat on this night, neither live or international. On March 12th, the Mania of WrestleMania documentary about WrestleMania 19 was broadcast on UPN. It was also part of the expanded DVD set for WrestleMania 20 as well. It was the first solo production by WWE Studios. It was in 2004, Ring of Honor started their WrestleMania weekend tradition. The show was overshadowed by NWA TNA announcing they'd be pulling talent from future ROH shows. Amazing Red defeated Teddy Hart, Sonjay Dutt, Mark Briscoe, and Jimmy Rave. Our buddy Xavier defeated Slick Wagner Brown. Jerry Lynn defeated Nigel McGuinness. Matt Stryker beat our friend John Walters. BJ Whitmer and Danny Maff defeated the Second City Saints. Ricky Steamboat was the special referee for the Pure Championship match when AJ Styles retained over CM Punk. ROH title on the steel cage, Samoa Joe retained over Jay Briscoe. And the Carnage crew defeated Special K. So there's your Ring of Honor weekend show. So that brings us to our show here. Lots of hype, guys. And I remember talking about this extensively, the speculation of the legends and wrestlers that could show up. Like, I remember thinking there was going to be a bunch of, like, former guys in the crowd all over the place, and they didn't really do any of that. Were you guys surprised? Like, I thought they would just pull guys out of nowhere, and, you know, Nikolai Volkov, all the usuals, Albano, and just stick them all
Nikolai
in the crowd.
Volkov.
You know? I don't know.
I had higher expectations. I was hoping for, like, Ultimate Warrior and Savage, and meanwhile,
right.
Justin's here just praying for a Nikolai Volkov appearance. But yeah, I was thinking there would be a lot more of the history played out, and they do that at some points, but I thought there would be a lot more of that, oh, Million Dollar Man's here, you know, everybody.
Right. Kevin
you know,
Nash,
that's
Scott
throughout
Hall,
the history.
Like, guys like right, that, like, just sitting out in the crowd, chilling. Yeah. I was definitely
shocked. Then we got Donald Trump in the crowd. Cool.
Sadly, most of the guys you would have liked wanted Claire were sadly on the proverbial Vince shit list. Still at that point, they hadn't
gotten off yet.
No,
all you
but
do
I mean,
is, die or get close to die.
So we just have to talk to them. Yeah, but I mean, I agree with you, JR. I was looking for more like WrestleMania 1 guys. You know, so
right.
like Nikolai and the Sheik. Although Sheik would have been, you know, probably sitting there going crazy and
right.
ranting
Bob
and raving.
Bob Orton,
and
guys like that.
Yeah,
whatever.
You know, Snuka,
the Executioner. Yes,
SD Jones,
David San Martino. God.
You know, the beefer, you know.
So Hall of Fame returns here as well. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but I thought it was a good idea. It was the perfect time to do it. Nostalgia's still kind of growing. The DVD stuff is growing. And, of course, WrestleMania 20. This is also really one of the first times it becomes a full weekend event in Extravaganza. Like we mentioned, the Sutton Oats, you have the ROH show. And Access had been around now for a while, but this is the first time to me it felt like adding in the Hall of Fame, plus Access, plus indie promotions. It really, for the first time, felt like it was the weekend more than just the night.
Right. Yeah, definitely. They did that. They did the WrestleMania bus that drove across America. Yep. They started out in California and ended on this
Lex
side of
Express
the country.
Repackaged.
Exactly. Yes.
I wonder if they have the same driver, that poor bastard.
Lex Express. Yes. JR, you and I would take part in that the following year when it would go obviously in the opposite direction. But this was just the pomp and circumstance for the show was great. They did a lot of programming before this. Of course, they did that Mania of WrestleMania, which was the documentary that they were filming during WrestleMania 19 weekend in Seattle, when documented Rock coming back and, of course, Austin's health issues that night and I think Angle's neck and a bunch of other stuff. And then they did a top 10 WrestleMania matches countdown show hosted by Ric Flair. Anybody remember
that
number
was in
one?
The DVD set as well? Bret and Shawn, right? The Iron Man.
It was Bret and Shawn, yeah. I think Bret and Shawn was one. I think Savage Steamboat was like three. I think the ladder match from 16 was number two.
Okay.
Something like that. But it was a good show. So, yeah, it was definitely getting more pomp. And this was the first weekend that they really treated WrestleMania like something really, really big.
And a good vibe overall, too. You get the history meeting the future that they were trying to do. So the Hall of Fame and, like Claire said, some historical moments brought up and some history woven in, but a lot of it focusing on the future and the now. Similar to WrestleMania 10, I thought, in the setup and feeling, where they're really focusing on the younger guys that are coming up and where they're headed more than looking back. Rare MSG, like you mentioned, Scott, without that short aisle. I thought the lit-up ceiling makes it look unique as well, the way they had everything lit up.
Yep.
Boys Choir is back, just like WrestleMania 10. Although they don't have Little Richard with them. They're just singing on their own. I thought it was a really cool opening video. And I remember the three of us all liked that final shot with Vince, Shane, and Shane's newborn son in the picture. Yep. Kind of like, did you guys get the feeling at that, watching that like Vince was almost going to be done soon and Shane was going to be taken over? Didn't it really feel like that at that point?
Yes.
Kind of. It was like, here's the line of succession here. Not so much, huh?
No, who would have thought 11 years later was Shane's gone, his son's MIA, and Vince is...
and he has no...
It was kind of weird. I definitely wasn't expecting a baby to be on the screen at the end of that package.
Like, right, it was odd. But it was like really cool. It was like, okay, here we go. Vince is wrapping up soon. We're setting up for Shane to take... Like that, I remember that really being a feel at the time. Great live experience overall.
Absolutely.
Of course, it was Selection Sunday, Scott. And if you remember, our Providence College Friars got hosed on Selection Sunday. They had been ranked that year, were very good, got a five seed, had to go out west to play Pacific, who was a way under seeded 12, and Pacific beat them up in that one. I remember just being pissed off when, I don't think we were texting yet, so I must have been on the phone with someone, or someone was talking to someone, because I know we found out while we were sitting there what they were going to be, and I remember being pissed off that they were five and that Pacific was going to be the 12 because
an incident, and you know, in a roundabout way, JR, I believe, if I'm just doing my research properly here, I believe that Pacific win over Providence, no, that must have been another year. I was thinking that Pacific year led to the Clippers drafting Michael Olo.
That was in
the 90s. Dwight Howard was number one pick that year,
right? Pacific was good in this year,
but
it wasn't, They should never have been a 12. That was way interceded. So the three of us had attended Raw the week before. Claire, if you remember, that was the infamous Raw. We brought our RIP Hercules sign, and we get the king to nod at us after he had passed away.
I do recall that.
I do remember. I'm surprised you guys remember that show, because you were both fairly pickled.
You've already told me everything I remember. So
Well, I remember a couple of things as we saw them as we moved through this, which we'll talk about. And Mania is really stacked and bloated, selling the big anniversary. So we'll talk about all the matches now, but a very loaded, built-up show here.
Yeah, I mentioned you before, JR. What do you think about this theory, Claire? I feel like that Vince kind of made this show like almost an old-school Federation-era show from like WrestleMania's 4 through 7, where he just wanted to give everybody as big a piece of the pie as possible. Because, I mean,
It seemed like everybody needed to have a match, which, I mean, literally, they got almost everybody, I think, under contract on this show.
I guess we talk about him now.
Except for Nikolai Volkov.
No, Matt Hardy. And I remember he was supposed to fight Mark Henry, I think, and Henry got hurt. Shocker. And so Hardy got left off. And I remember a lot of people being pissed because this was during the whole Hardy's getting screwed. He was so great as V1 and now he's doing nothing. And completely, he's like the only guy not on this card, I think, that was under contract that meant anything. I don't know why they couldn't throw him in the Cruiserweight match.
Mm. But, I mean, this was a big, and this was a huge moneymaker for the city. $2.4 million in ticket sales for this show.
Wow.
Highest grossing event ever to this point for WWE at the Garden. 20,000 people, 16 countries, 48 states, $13.5 million in economic activity for New York City, and which is the equivalent of 96 created an equivalent of 96 full year jobs. So big time scratch going through New York City that day. So just an incredible show. Looking forward to breaking it down. Obviously no heat or anything of that nature. So let's dive in. Our opener, the first of many championship matches on this evening, gentlemen. The United States Championship on the line. Your champion, as JR mentioned, The Big Show, who won it, of course, back in October from Eddie Guerrero, taking on the number one contender and making his long-awaited WrestleMania debut. And that is, of course, John Cena. A year ago, he sang in the pre-show at WrestleMania 19.
Sang. He cut raps on Fabulous.
Yeah, he spun back.
Sang America the Beautiful.
Style.
Yes. Yeah, acting like he was the boys' choir.
I know, right?
yes.
A beautiful song.
Now this, so
I think he did a couple Beatles songs beforehand. And then
yes. So here we go. The Big Show and John Cena, JR. First title match of the evening.
Yep. The round world famous singer John Cena on 219 challenged the Big Show for his U.S. title. The match was quickly signed for this show. The two would have some verbal and physical confrontations the week leading up. Cena got the last laugh when he jumped Show, knocked him to the floor on the 311 SmackDown, and then stood over him and sang Fly Me to the Moon. Big Cena solo moment here after months of tags and multi-man matches working his way up the ladder. The crowd is really into his entrance and rap, and he's clearly ascending. You could feel it here. Super pops. Big Show finally defending the title after it seemed like he never defended it since he won it. Cena tries to brawl, but Show batters him. Cole reads off Show's MSG accomplishments, which I thought was a pretty cool touch, how he beat Brock at Survivor Series. What was the other one? He had a couple that he listed. Oh, the Rumble. Was it the Rumble? Rumble of 2000. Were there a few things he talked about? I don't know if you guys picked up on those at all. I know Survivor Series 02 was one of the ones he mentioned. Mr. America, I think he said. Wasn't that an MSG? When he ran Mr. America out of the company.
Yeah, he did mention running or making Hulk Hogan leave or retire or something like that. That was something he ticked off.
Yeah, there was a few. There were like three things he mentioned. Show uses his chops and strikes early as the crowd rallies Cena. Big Show stalks with confidence and patience. He hits a nice-looking vertical suplex. Cena gets a short comeback. Show cuts it off with a good boot to the face. All Big Show offense here. Cena survives the final cut, goes for a sleeper. Big Show busts that up. Big Show hits a Cobra Clutch, which is kind of a nice random submission attempt. Good slugfest back and forth. Cena makes his comeback, pops up, and hits a quick FU, but Big Show kicked out. I thought that was a really good near fall. I completely forgot about. Cena uses the chain and hits a second FU for the win and a huge pop. Fun opener with great big versus little stuff, and I was really impressed by this match. I liked it a lot. Good win. It was time for Cena to move up. Big Show did his job, and I thought it was really solid work while Big Show was on offense with Cena selling. And one other quick note, Claire and I had our John Cena WWF throwback shirts on. If you remember.
Yeah, we did.
Yes, you did. So, yep.
We were Cena Marks legit. I think,
we were. We were super into this when he came.
You forget how seriously, legitimately. I mean, I think he's legitimately over now, just in a bizarrely odd way. But he was seriously over with everybody. Really, I mean, he was huge.
Yeah, he gets a huge pop when he comes out here, and again, it was definitely his moment. Were you guys as impressed with this match as I was? I didn't remember. I remembered it more being like Big Show plods around for a few minutes and then Cena hits the FU with a chain and gets the big pop. I don't remember Show being so energetic.
I can't say I was impressed, because I mean I just on a rewatch, I think if you look at it as a match in a bubble, you know, just as this one match, it's really not like anything special. But it's when you have the volume on and when you were there, I think especially too, and you know how hot that crowd was, and you know they kept it short enough that it didn't really even have the chance to bore me. It's mostly just Big Show, you know, doing his chops, doing his kind of somewhat boring offense. But we're all just waiting for Cena to come back and win this thing, and he did. And I really did like the ending too, kind of channeling Eddie Guerrero there with the kind of, he actually used a distraction. He acted like he was going to use the chain,
right,
and tossed it, and the ref like went after the chain. Then he used the Nux, and I think Cena was a lot cooler when he still cheated to win as well. But
and see, that's the one thing I disagree with you on. I want to see what Scott's take is. I thought Big Show's offense was a little bit different here. I thought he varied it a bit more. He seemed to be moving a bit better than he had been. I liked like the Cobra Clutch and the breaking out the final cut.
Maybe
and
it was interesting for Big Show, but I just don't.
Well, that's what I meant. It seemed like more. I was expecting the usual Big Show match where he stomps around and just uses strikes and beats on a guy, but he seemed to have a little extra zip in his step, I thought, in this one. Scott, what did you think?
Yeah, it's funny because on the network, whenever they try to like the stream tries to fill out an hour after, you know, fill out the top of the hour after a show is played, they play this like they have vignettes that are actually matches. This one they play constantly. So I feel like even before I watched this show last week to prep for this show, for our show, I feel like I've watched this match like 11 times. And I think I think you're right, JR. He used his size differently. Instead of just like plodding around like Andre would. In Andre's later years when he couldn't move that well, he actually used his weight to use moves.
Right.
And he wore out Cena. And this match was very different than I remember it being.
Yeah, me too. I was really expecting something boring. I don't know.
Yeah. No, he definitely used his size more than his normal, like you said, his normal Big Show, you know, splashes and, you know, frying pans chops to the chest and stuff like that. I mean, he did do that, but I feel like he moved around a little differently and kind of ground Cena into the dirt, into the mat, using moves with his weight rather than just using his weight.
Yep.
Splashes.
I think I was just too distracted by Michael Cole and his like ridiculous analogies. He said like getting a headbutt from Big Show is like getting hit with a typewriter or something. Like he was just saying some weird, really weird shit.
That's right.
I really was kind of mesmerized by the whole thing.
I love
just
it.
Like I think he brought a list of household items that he's like, all right, I'm going to mention at least 15 of these during the first match and compare them to things Big Show to ways Big Show hits you.
I love Taz's tux. He's back to the was it like a late 02, early 03 look where he looks like the kid in his dad's suit again with the
yes, large shoulder pads and yes.
Taz in the tux is always a way.
Pops, I don't want to wear tux.
So you're breaking out Caesar there from the Kroll show for a minute. Blah, blah. All right, so John Cena, your new United States heavyweight champion.
Yep.
And we'll see what 2004 brings him. Show
no
good soldier
there.
Lays down. Before our next match, Scott, we head backstage where Jonathan Coachman mixed up with Eric Bischoff and Johnny Nitro. Bischoff's mm-hmm. new henchman or lackey was John Hennigan, who had co-won Tough Enough 3 mm-hmm. back the year before. So he is his new lackey on Raw. Bischoff commissions a coach to go find The Undertaker, who he hears is in the building. Great Evolution promo we get here in the same stairwell that Orton kicked Foley down back in mid-03. And I love the camera work here, how we get the different cuts and the different angles. And I loved Evolution's cockiness. I thought they've really grown as a team over the last few months.
Yeah, I liked the kind of the evolution, no pun intended, of Orton Foley's progression, and that's what makes the show so long. Like, I mean, if you throw it on the network right now, listeners, you look at the length of the show, you're like 4.5 hours. Jesus,
this is daunting.
Oh my God! But you figure at least 40 minutes of it is Phil of promos and build.
Yeah.
And I like that. That's what I'm saying. How deceivingly old school this WrestleMania is. You know,
and it was by design. It was completely by design.
It was definitely by design, but you don't really think about it because we're not in that era of history. But this pay-per-view
definitely stands out now, because now you get like 6 matches in a 4-hour WrestleMania.
Exactly.
Right. They just have a totally different way of going, of laying out the shows.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, we had at least 15 minutes between the end of Cena Big Show and our next match. Usually it's just, you know, now it's like, you know, 2 minutes of backstage crap and then we go right to the next match, which is fine if you want to, you know, for the match purposes. But this was just really great, and it put over Orton because he's the guy that's, you know, he's of the guys in Evolution, he's the one under the microscope right now. So they needed to make that point clear as he took in the handicap match later. So I thought that was awesome. It was a good thing for Evolution.
It really well shot. I like the cinematography of it all, of the whole thing. It was different, and it made it stick out. Any notes on that, Claire, before we move on?
Nope, I pretty much said it all. Okay. They've come together as they feel like are a legit team, I think, now, more so than when they were just... They felt kind of, you know, they got hindered by Orton and Batista getting injured, and for a while it was just kind of, they were kind of more Triple H's lackeys, but now they're kind of standing on their own, even apart from him seeming like, you know, a legit threat.
Right.
And that's where Flair came in handy, because they were able to get away from Triple H to kind of build their own cred up, but they had Flair there still to help them out. So it's not like they were completely on their own.
Right. Exactly. So let's go on to our next match, which is our second title match of the evening.
Is it?
It is. The World Tag Team Championships, a.k.a. the Red Belts, on the line. Your champions, as JR mentioned, Booker T and RVD.
We take what we want, and after we take Lex Luger and the Giant, we want the gold, sucker. Hulk Hogan, we coming for you, nigga.
You never said it. You never played that far back, but it sounds like you said Lex Luger, we got him in the John. Lex Luger, we got you in the John, and then we're coming for you. You know, it's... It just never real because you never play the cut that far back. I thought that was really sound like what he said. Anyway, yes, Booker.
How long is the whole speech? About 7 minutes? Should we just play the whole thing?
I know, right?
The day will come a little bit.
So we have the full context, so we really know what's going on here.
Yes.
Which John was he in?
We got Lex Luger and John. That's what it sounds like he said. In a fatal four-way, so we have three other teams, our three teams put together here. One, part of Shawn Michaels' school that he graduated from, Mr. Garrison Cade. And we'll talk about him in a moment. And one half of the WCW Tag Team Champions from way back, and a almost member of Evolution, being Mark Jindrak. Mm-hmm. The Dudley Boys, again. And former World Tag Team Champions, and one of my PIC's favorite teams, La Resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So a little backstory, JR, as we get to this.
Booker T and RVD took that goal, sucker, when they defeated Ric Flair and Batista on the February 16th Raw. On March 8th, Booker and RVD teamed to take on the team with the Dudley Boys to battle Jindrak O'Hara, La Resistance. The match had a surprising finish when Rob Conway picked up the win on Booker.
Robert.
I prefer Robert. La Rez has been comprised of Rob Conway and Rene Dupree since October, which is when Sylvain Grenier went down with a back injury. Grenier returned the next night on Raw after the show.
And I think they would do like the Freebird rule from here on out. We'll talk more about that.
Not much longer, because remember the split up weeks after that.
Did they really? That's because I feel like they got back together. That's right. It was the following year. But so they really didn't do the Freebird rule. It would have been cool if they did. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah.
Companies working to get everyone on the card, like we mentioned before. So we get the four-way here. La Rez is back in the title picture after being a little bit aimless. Jindrak and Cade, kind of the dark horses maybe to grab the gold here. Dudley's get a good pop. We say it every month. Feeling a little bit played out, needing a change. RVD and Booker, good tag champs, but it's kind of sad where they've ended up. And I want to pause here and talk about this with you guys for a second. When you think back to 02 and 03 and all the promise they had, and now you see them here with their shitty mashed up theme, you know, just wasting their promise, killing off their hot themes, their hot, like... It, to me, it was a perfect allegory for where the careers have gone. They actually had two of the better theme songs in the company, and they waste them with these bullshit, mashed-up, bastardized version. And then you think of their careers, right? Where they were in 02 and 03, guys that could have headlined those manias easily, how much the crowds loved them, and now they're here slumming it in this four-way tag match, checking from the top with three heatless teams. Like, it just felt so disappointing when they come out, and it's like, yeah, it makes sense that these guys are teaming together because they've both completely been wasted by this company. Did you guys get that same feeling when you saw them kind of lope out here?
Yeah, they're kind of like, it's like the victims of Hunter, the victims of Triple H tag team. They're like kind of like two battered wives that found common ground. At least that's the storyline that I play out in my own head backstage, why they're a tag team. But
Faster wives.
I mean, it's sad that they're the only way these guys get on the show now is in the throwaway tag team match.
Exactly.
The only point of which is to get everyone on the show. So it's really they're just like just another guy. I mean, they're no different than
right. Jindrak and Cade. Yeah, and, right. I mean, they're in with them. I'm surprised they didn't pull the Hardy and just, you know, keep them off altogether. But.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I mean, we've talked for many vaults, JR, about RVD and just toiling away and Booker. I mean, he got hurt, so he wasn't around for a big chunk of 03. Not that he probably would have done anything anyway. But, yeah, it's sad. I mean,
could even have them fight here, teams, like in a respect match or something, would have been better than this.
These teams are dreadful. These teams are absolutely dreadful. No, the Dudleys are just – I'm just so done with the Dudleys. So done.
Think of where the tag division was in 02 and early 03 and just where they're at now. And, you know, it's just – I mean, Booker and RVD at the time would have been a pretty cool, like, super team. But now they feel like they're more on the level of these guys than above them. Like, they didn't feel like they stood out among these teams here. Then that's a problem.
Well, here's the thing. I think this match is a huge indicator of what's happened to the roster in 2 years.
Yeah.
The roster is nothing like it was in 2002. It is so thin now. And we've talked about this a lot, JR.
Which makes it even worse that they're stuck. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Just like we've mentioned it on both the single show pay-per-views throughout the end of 03. They're scraping bottom of the barrel here. It's sad. It is sad. What do you think, Claire?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, they're just kind of afterthoughts. They're just another guy. I mean, we think they could have been like these headliners, and I don't know if that's it's really hard to say what could have been. I mean, we can say RVD's the headliner, but I mean, was he going to be like John Cena, head of the company for 10 years?
No, but I think he could have headlined.
Guy? No, but,
you don't think he could have headlined WrestleMania like 18? With
yeah,
how over
he
was? Okay, so that's
absolutely
all I meant.
Absolutely, but I think when it comes down to it, it's almost like, I mean, the parallels to today are there. I just don't think he's a Vince kind of guy, ponytailed, flying around stoner. He's not a face of the company guy. He's a guy who we can sell some t-shirts, we can put him out there, the kids will be happy, but at the end of the day, Vince shrugs his shoulders and he's like, whatever.
But what makes it like more annoying is that when he was big is when he was more likely to have been a Vince McMahon guy. 2001, 02. Like, to me, if there was ever a time where a guy like him could have maybe broken through and gotten that push, it was around then, before Vince settled back into this, I got no more competition, I'll do whatever the fuck I want, and no one can stop me phase. Like, when he was the underdog fan favorite guy. Like, if RVD came in like 2000 instead, he might have fared a little bit better, you know?
Even in like 98, 99, if they just took that ECW crossover and just pulled him straight over, and if he was a big part of the Attitude Era or something, that's where he really would have fit in. That's where he could have made those stoner references all the time, and it totally would have fit in just fine. But I think even though the PG era hadn't started yet, it was already kind of starting in a way.
Until we get to 05.
They were easing it down until live sex celebration.
05. Yeah. It's 05, and I'm actually in a weird way looking forward to late 05 when they just go completely out of their fucking minds with everything. They go back to USA and it's like become raunch sex city again.
Yes, it's funny, you know, mentioning when you said Claire about like 99, I almost think that, and this obviously this could be another topic for another podcast, but
all right, I'll come back next week, sure.
Yeah. Oh, back for another show.
You can expand on this.
Yes. Another, I mean, had RVD come in 99, could he have replaced Big Show and been Shane's guy at WrestleMania 16? I bet you'd have been red hot.
All right,
if he was part of that.
I like that combo.
I like where you're headed. We got way too much to talk about the stuff.
But that got in my head. Well, that's another talk for another day.
Well,
anyway,
especially because it would have ended with like Shane versus RVD at SummerSlam or something when they break up. And
yes,
like,
and Shane would have died.
That just sounds amazing.
Shane would have probably beat him.
Or Shane would have pinned him or killed himself, one of the, or both.
All right.
Anyway, so yeah, this match is a dog.
We got some good teamwork from the champs early. Get some double team offense on Dupree. Conway's working tonight. Like we mentioned, Sylvain Hurts. Booker busts up Bubba. Flip off fly with a nice sidekick. The champs dominate, work together as much as possible. Booker falls into the heat segment with La Rez and Kate and Jindrak working him over. And I thought this was way too slow for a multi-man match. No flow, very choppy. RVD gets a hot tag, starts potatoing everyone as always. D-Von shoves RVD off the top and everything breaks down to a brawl. RVD takes advantage and hits the 5-star on Conway for the win. I didn't think this was very good at all. I know they wanted to get these guys on the card, but they should have just had a straight tag. There was way too much going on and too slow of a pace. There was no rhythm at all. They should have done RVD Booker against the Dudleys if they had to be the tag champs and you wanted to have a match. I thought the flow was just non-existent for this.
Yeah, I agree. I think very simply, you've got guys in this match that I think might have been a little, well, I mean, Jindrak and Cade, I mean, they've barely teamed together, and I think they were a little over their heads with this kind of booking situation. La Rez was La Rez. They were fine. The Dudleys, as I mentioned, I just think they're just fried. And RVD and Booker, like you said, I think they're out there just to, you know, hey, we're getting paid. Like the job squad. Not fun at all. Not fun at all. What do you think, Clark?
It felt like what we were saying it was, which is a match to get everyone on the card. That's exactly what it felt like. That everyone got like their 2 minutes in the ring to get their couple moves in, and then then it's over.
But slow spots in a four way like this was like unacceptable to me.
Yeah, no, there's no excuse for it. It should just be if they're gonna have it be everyone get their stuff in and have a match. It should just be that. There should be no rest holes. There should be nothing. There should just be 5 minutes of action. And this match, I might have liked this if it was just 5 minutes of like more of a nonstop kind of thing, but
right.
I mean, I guess it was only seven, but it was just kind of a boring seven too.
It should have been more flying around. I know they didn't want to go too crazy.
I mean, was there any storyline behind this whatsoever? It was just like, here's your tag match.
Right. Nothing. Yeah.
No. Nope. Just that they wrestled probably the 2 weeks before or whatever it was, or that week before. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, so. Nothing build. No. Waste of time. So we go backstage again. The coach, kind of billowing through the basement, finds a closet with some noises coming out of it, opens it up, and Gene Okerlund and Bobby Heenan come out to a nice pop. And it turns out they were making out with Mae Young and Fabulous Moolah. I thought it was awesome seeing Gene and Bobby together. And remember at the time, legends weren't as prevalent. Like, these guys hadn't been on really much. I mean, Gene had been around, but Bobby hadn't been on since probably, what, WrestleMania 17? Had he been used at all for anything? So,
no, not. I mean, you probably saw him the night before at the Hall of Fame. That's pretty much it, really.
So a fun comedic moment there. I remember really liking that, and it still holds up today. Pretty fun.
Oh, definitely. No, there's no doubt about it. So next up.
Aren't they both married, Gene and Bobby? This seems like kind of risky.
I know, right?
Yes.
On camera and everything. And then,
yeah.
Know.
Someone tells me their wives will laugh. Well, we've seen Gene now in Legends House, quite the lech. So,
yeah, he's a worm anyway. So.
Yeah, not a surprise.
He's shaping
arm. Now, who was with who? He was with Moolah, right?
Bobby, yeah, I think he was with Moolah. Yeah. It's even weirder.
Oh, there you go.
All right. Next
I'd rather
up,
make out with Gene Okerlund than Mayor Moolah, I think.
With that crazy arm of his. All right, next up we
have... Twice so swollen.
We have our kind of our cool kind of respect turns into feud match. No belts, no nothing, just two great wrestlers in a match. And that is between former tag partners, Y2J, Chris Jericho, and Christian. And this backstory goes quite a few months. Tell us, JR.
And the Jan, well, we're not going to go all the way back, but this thing's been serving for a while, as we know. Right. Remember, they had the tag match at Armageddon.
Yep.
On the 126 Raw, Chris Jericho confronted Eric Bischoff to finally cash in on a Survivor Series favor. Jericho requested a title match for Triple H. Before he granted the wish, Bischoff informed Jericho that he made a match featuring Kane facing Trish Stratus later that night. Bischoff said Jericho could use his favor to face Hunter or save his friend, and Jericho chose to save Trish. Later that night, Trish thanked Jericho and told him she hoped they could be good friends. Christian came in and told Jericho to get his head straight because they had an number one contenders tag match the following week. The next week came, Bischoff tricked Trish into facing Kane. Jericho made the save but injured his knee doing so. Christian berated him because their number one contenders match had been switched to a title match and now he was hurt. He also got on Trish's case about coming in between them. And Jericho and Christian would lose the match when Flair took advantage of Jericho's injured knee. The next week, Christian changed his tune and helped Jericho and Trish win a match before telling Trish they should be able to have a healthy relationship. On February 16th, Jericho was planning on giving a rose to Trish, but she ended up in the hospital after further... he ended up in the hospital after further hurting his knee. Christian would later save Trish from an impending test attack. He then offered to give Trish a ride to the hospital before giving her the rose and walking off with his arm around her. The next week, Christian lobbied for a tag title match at WrestleMania, but Bischoff gave him the match with Trish that night and... gave him a match with Trish tonight and said, Christian told Trish he didn't want to fight, but offered to just lie down in the ring for her. When the time came for the match, Christian went back on his word, crushed Trish with a clothesline, and forced her to tap out to the walls of Jericho. On March 1st, Christian came out to gloat and announced he'd be facing Jericho at WrestleMania. Jericho made a surprise return in an awful pair of cargo pants and charged the ring, yes. But Christian kicked his knee and snuck away. Finally, the next week, Christian assaulted Jericho backstage and took off in a waiting car. He returned later, though, and cost Jericho a match with Stevie Richards by coming out to Trish's music and distracting Chris. After simmering since November, and their tag run even before that, this feud was set to explode. So live love triangle still going on. Jericho turned face after Christian kept his heat on Trish, pissed that she got in between them. Lots of excitement for this one from a quality standpoint. A very deep angle. It was well-written and woven. If you remember, they had a lot of say in the writing of it, the four of them, Lita involved too. Christian finally looking legitimate, I thought, as all finally came together with his tights, his hair, the music. He's ready to take that jump finally instead of the stringy hair and the, you know, the cool Christian you're on your own music, but not really kind of screaming for a guy that is any kind of legitimate threat. Mm. Jericho's back to being a face for the first time in 2.5 years since late 01. Tim White's return match, remember that, guys? He was hurt in the Hell in a Cell back in 02 where Jericho and Triple H fought. Unfortunately, during this match, he re-injures his shoulder and then is forced to retire. So, great referee had to hang it up. Jericho's on the attack. It's a nice back suplex and outworks Christian. Christian gets dumped to the floor. Jericho dives on him and punches him outside. Christian avoids the walls and back suplexes Jericho to the floor. Christian slows things down, chinlock to take control. I thought Christian wrestled smart, goes to the eyes to cut off Jericho and then hits an impact shot with the leg lariat. Jericho makes a quick comeback as momentum shifts, including a pair of near falls. Jericho eats knees on the lion salt, great back and forth with big blows, but neither guy can grab an advantage. Christian hooks a perfect cloverleaf, which I loved. The crowd rallies Jericho. and he reverses it to a walls, but Christian gets the ropes. Jericho drags him back to the down to the floor while in the hold, which is unique. Jericho, it's a nice butterfly suplex. Trish comes out looking hot, cheers on Jericho. Christian hits a nasty impaler, really spiking Jericho on his head. Trish gets on the apron. Christian drags her in and throws her to the ground. Trish gets blinded accidentally, and she slaps Jericho by accident. Christian rolls him up for the upset win. This is a huge win for Christian. After the match, Trish turns heel, smacks Jericho in the face. It was fairly obvious. I remember a lot of people assumed it was coming, but I thought it was really well done and executed well. I remember being pissed at the time because I didn't think it was a good idea, but as soon as you saw her sneer and then make out with Christian, I changed my mind that, okay, she could pull it off. Great heat, very good match, lots of time, and I thought it was fitting for this in-depth feud that they get a lot of time, and a huge confidence point for Christian with a mega win over a guy like Jericho. So, Claire, what did you think of this one? Did you dig the story? Did the match pay off the story in your eyes? And did you like the Trish turn?
Man, they really did. It's really weird seeing the male on women violence just in that video package leading up to it. It's just, it seems so out of place now because you just don't see that stuff anymore. So that kind of like struck me, even though, I mean, I've kind of been following along here and we saw the whole match with them against Trish and Lita. But yeah, and I also, I'm glad you mentioned Jericho's ridiculous like camo pants in that one spot because they were pretty damn funny, pretty damn absurd. But the match itself, it was kind of slow for a while, but then towards the end it really picked up when they started going back and forth, and I love how he kept the lion tamer on, or the walls of Jericho, I guess, on the outside. That was a good spot. And I can't really remember. I don't know. You said that you know, we kind of saw it coming. I don't really remember if I saw the Trish turn coming or not, but I liked how they kind of did it with where right when the match ended, it didn't look like they were going to, you know, have a turn right there. It looked like they were going to kind of keep it open-ended by having her do that accidental hit and, you know, Jericho get the pin or get pinned. But once she did that slap, those vicious slaps, her slaps were like so vicious and they came out of nowhere because you kind of weren't expecting it at that moment anyway. And once she hit those slaps and then Christian hit whatever his move was called, the impaler or something like that. I don't know what it was called, the unprettier. And he makes that smirk and then they cut to Trish with her smirk. And it's just, they are like, suddenly they seem like the perfect duo, the perfect evil duo. And it's just definitely it was a good turn, I think. Even if it was seen coming, it was an effective turn and, you know, something built to, I don't know. Did they have a bunch of matches after this? I think they probably did. I don't really
remember. Yeah, they definitely do. Christian gets hurt a little bit coming up, but they definitely have more. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it was widely rumored or like certain, but I definitely know. I remember in before the match we were talking about that it may happen. I remember being very against it because I kind of like Trish and Jericho together, and I just didn't think she'd be able to pull off the heel stuff that well. She just didn't seem like she completely had it in her. Of course, she'd prove us all wrong, and it would be the turning point of her career overall. Scott, how about you with this one?
The match was tremendous. I think this was the moment that we can honestly say that if there was any moment to strike a main event run for Christian, this was it. Totally. When we talk about SmackDown post-Mania, I want to talk about Christian because I think he was a guy at this point that you maybe could have plugged into some main event stuff. If not on Raw, then on SmackDown. But this was I thought this was a really good match. I agree with you, Claire, but that the first like 4 or 5 minutes were a little slow, but I feel like it really picked up. And they really worked each other well, and they had good chemistry anyway. But I think we learned at the end, and as you said, JR got kind of taken aback at the end. Face Trish is hot, heel Trish is even hotter, and I think
Trish is hot, heel Trish is smoking.
Yeah,
no doubt about it. I think she had it all. It's amazing. I think she had it in her all along, and I don't think we ever thought we'd see it. But the only bad thing that she did was she totally whiffed on Jericho's first slap, and then she cracked him the second time. But
it kind of worked. Like, it's just this angry bitch that lost her mind trying to smack this guy out of anger. Like, you don't expect her to land, like, perfect Jerry Lawler strikes. You know, it's okay that she's kind of whiffing on slaps and just going right at him. Like, that was fine by me.
Yeah, it was just funny. But overall, great package. And I thought it was a fine swerve to keep this feud going. Kudos to them for writing this. This is a pretty complex, deep psychological storyline that didn't need a lot of non-wrestling interference, and you had, you know, four people who knew what they were doing putting it together. So I liked it a lot, and I thought the ending was fine, and the Trish heel turn worked because it was kind of a shock and a change of pace for her that I think she needed, a little freshening up character-wise, and Jericho eating the pin meant nothing. Not meant nothing. I mean, how do I rephrase that? Didn't hurt him. He was bulletproof at this point.
It helps Christian a lot more than it would ever hurt Jericho.
Yeah, no,
Jericho's
bulletproof at this point.
I think at this point, Jericho's kind of already untouchable. You know, he's already had those couple matches with Shawn Michaels. He's already been the unified title, and he's already permanently over. So, the only person that could benefit from this is Christian, and he looked like gold at the end of this thing. He looked awesome.
Right, I think Kevin always says it. I mean, that Night of Vengeance 01 is what really locked Jericho in as a bulletproof guy, beating Rock and Steve Austin the same night. Regardless of how it happened, what went down, and what happened afterwards, just that night alone makes him a guy that, whatever, he can lose a match like this. But like you said, Claire, this is bigger, way bigger for Christian than it ever would have been for him to win the feud.
Yeah. So
just to give Christian the win, the bragging rights, the woman, like this, all the shit that he really needed to get him to the next level. So we talked about it. He's got the music, the look, the tights, the woman. I mean, he's got everything now. He's got all the gotten the Jeff Jarrett catalog package of of gimmicks to get himself over. So
I mean, he's he definitely looked like the Brood Christian up until like a few months before this. Still, I mean, he wasn't like dark, but he had basically the same outfit, the stupid mesh shirt and that crappy hair. I mean, now he finally has changed his look and he's got the chick and he just looks like, all right, now I'm a legit guy. I'm not just the leftovers of the Brood.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So there you go. So Christian gets the win. Trish is this.
Although Gangrel is like Trish's protective uncle, part of the crew. It would have been good.
Yeah. So Christian wins a match. Jericho's pissed, stunned, and Trish is now an evil vixen.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, our next match. After a year off, he's back in the ring at a WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he wrestled The Undertaker at WrestleMania 18, but took last year off to be at Triple H's side against Booker T. We have a 3-on-2 handicap match. The remaining members of Evolution, Ric Flair, Batista, and your Intercontinental Champion, Randy Orton, as Matt Rotella would say, taking on the reunited team, who I don't think have teamed on pay-per-view since, I believe, No Mercy 99. Or did they wrestle
Armageddon 99?
Armageddon. Well, did they wrestle in Armageddon? I think they did. You might be right. Yeah. So for the first time since Armageddon 99, this team teams together. I could see you singing karaoke to this, Claire. Their flowing Andy Gibb hair.
You could see me sometime. Maybe we'll make that happen.
Maybe we should make it happen. JR, we have a huge backstory here. Why don't you dive in?
Yeah, on the 126th Raw, Mick Foley returned to confront Randy Orton. He explained that after he buried his motivational hatred when he retired, that is why he walked out back in December. After imploring Orton to spit on him again, Foley snapped, sliced his face open, and chased Orton and the rest of Evolution off. The next week, Foley jumped Orton during a match with Shawn Michaels running him through the crowd. On 2-9, Foley looked for revenge on Orton's propaganda videos that had been released. He revealed photos of Orton's brief military stint, mocking his failures and calling him a real coward. He then challenged him to a match at WrestleMania. Orton appeared on the Tron and baited Foley into the ring, or into the catering area, rather, for a confrontation. As Foley made his way to the back, Evolution jumped him and beat him down. Batista put Foley through a table with a powerbomb, and Orton kicked him in the face. Later in the night, Orton put Olympic Foley down again with an RKO. We got more of the same on February 16th as Evolution again assaulted Foley and crushed him with a double powerbomb. On March 1st, Orton came down to talk to Foley and accepted the WrestleMania singles match. Foley countered with a handicap match offer because he knew a singles match would result him in getting assaulted by Evolution once again. The crowd began to buzz, and Orton addressed the recent rumors of who Foley's partner could be, and those rumors came true as The Rock came charging down the aisle to back up his friend. Foley would hook Orton in the mandible claw, and then Rock would put him down with a spinebuster in people's elbow. On 3-8, we got a blast from the past as Rock held a special This Is Your Life tribute to Foley. The guest Rock brought out included the old woman whose roof Foley famously jumped off of, Foley's childhood hero, Jimmy Snuka, and Foley's most harshest book critics. At the end of the segment, Evolution came down and took out Rock and Foley to set up the stage here. During Snuka's appearance on 3-8, Foley made him promise he would be in attendance for their match, and Snuka obliged. This led to some rumors that Snuka would either be in Rock and Sock's corner or maybe even be the third member of their team.
There are also rumors that they may recreate WrestleMania 1 and have Snuka in the corner and Bob Orton in the corner of his son. Alas, none of these came to pass. Do you guys think that would have added to the match in any way if Snuka was part of it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Definitely.
I mean, I don't know if he should have been in it at that point, but maybe as just a corner man to kind of counter the numbers game, I guess, against the three-man evolution.
How about if he was in the match? Would that have taken
away
from
Omega?
Well, he wrestled after this, didn't he? Didn't he come back and do the Jericho stuff? Was he part of that?
Versus
the Legend stuff?
Yeah, he wrestled.
So I guess
a lot.
He could have gone. He probably could have just come in and done a headbutt. And do we know if that was an actual thing they were trying to do and just couldn't work it out?
I think because he's there. They show him that when Rock and Foley do that promo before the match, he's like standing in the backstage. I mean, I think he would have done it. I think it's just maybe they don't want to hurt the story because it wasn't just like a thrown together Legends
kind of
match.
It certainly didn't need it.
Right.
I mean, they had a hell of a story going on just with, I mean, the whole point of it was really supposed to be the Foley Orton advancement of that storyline. The other guys were, at least in the beginning, were kind of just there, but they became so much more as the match went on, as we'll see.
And it was cool seeing Foley back on TV regularly now, because he hasn't really been on regularly. You know, he had that little stint as GM in December, but just having him back on week to week.
When did he retire? 4 years before this?
Yeah, 2000.
Time?
And then he was on a little bit in mid 03. Well, of course, he had the whole run in 2000, 2001 as a GM, and then the little stint in 03, and then at the end of 03 as GM in December before Sheriff Austin came back.
This is the first actual match, except unless you count the one coming back for WrestleMania, but we don't count that.
Yeah, it's his first match since WrestleMania 2000. Yep.
Yep. Wow. So almost exactly 4 years.
So Rock's final appearance on pay-per-view till 2011. After the show, he headed back to Hollywood for the next 6 years, only made a handful of appearances on TV, including inducting his father and grandfather to the Hall of Fame. Of course, he makes a successful film's final pay-per-view record before his most recent run in 2012.
Let's see if Mr. Clare can guess. Mr. Clare.
77 matches.
77 matches.
Here
we go.
Yes. Well, we'll take away. There's two no contests. So 65 decisions. There's two no contests. So just the 65 decisions. What's his record?
How many did he win? This includes, is this just TV or is this include like house shows?
No,
and
this
stuff?
Is just pay-per-view.
Just pay-per-view. Just
pay-per-view. It's just pay-per-view. Oh, all right.
65 pay-per-view matches.
Man, that's crazy.
Decisions. Yep.
I'm going to say he won 47 of them.
A little high.
Mm.
He won 34.
He was 34, 31, and 2.
I guess I'm thinking more of how recently, but I guess he didn't win a lot in the beginning. Well, even in the beginning, he did win. So I'm just trying to think of, I can't think of that many times Rock lost on pay-per-view.
I think it was a lot of that. After his right, when he first burst on, he won, then he lost a few in a row. And then when he was still the Rock during that little heel run, like 98, I think he lost a handful in there. Remember Shamrock beat him a few times.
I think he lost all those Shamrock matches. He just lost by DQ a lot.
And then all the ones too with Triple H in 2000, he alternated a bunch of those. So, and then Austin, you know, big matches, three alone with Austin there. So I think they added up. He was 3-4 at the Rumble, 4-4 at Mania, 3-2 at SummerSlam, 2-2 at King of the Ring, 7-2 at Survivor Series, 15-17-2 at other events. Two-time world champ, 7-time WWF champion, 2-time IC, 5-time tag, 1 Royal Rumble. 6-man to capture a triple crown following Pedro Morales, Bret Hart, Diesel, Shawn Michaels, and Steve Austin. So the match got underway, but before that, we should mention that great promo beforehand when Snuka and Morocco have a little cameo, and Rock makes the Hamburglar joke with Hurricane and Rosie. Great energy, just manic. The crowd is hyped. I thought it was fitting for a return for Foley, who wanted a big WrestleMania match. Evolution had great swagger. It started with Flair and just kind of oozed down to the other guys. Tremendous entrance and presence as they come down to the ring. Crowd loves Flair as always. Seemed funny on the surface for Rock to be in the mid-card, but when you look back, like at the time, I don't think I gave this match as much credit for how super important it would be. And it was really in retrospect when you realize, wow, Orton and Batista, looking at it now, this was really kind of their launching point. Did you guys feel it at the time? I don't remember our thoughts. Like, it seemed weird that Rock was thrown in this spot, fourth match on the card.
I don't think we realized Rock wasn't going to do this all the time. I mean, at the
That's
time, you
true,
know, it was kind of his last match. I mean, it was until 2011, like 7 years. And I think I always assumed he was going to be back every year, at least to do a Mania angle, maybe a SummerSlam angle, work with the top guys. I don't think we really fully had a grasp that he had really, really, really left wrestling. So yeah, I think I was just more thinking about Foley and The Rock than anything else. To me, that Evolution, I mean, they were over to me and they were cool, but I wasn't, I don't think I was quite thinking of Batista and Orton as the next main eventers. I mean, I knew they were being pushed in that way, but I don't feel that was really the focus that this match gave off. To me, this focus was to even though as we'll see with the ending of the match, it wasn't putting the fan favorites over, but the whole match was a crowd pleaser. It was all to get the stuff in to get those great spots from Flair and Rock and their interactions, to get Foley and all his stuff in, and it felt like a nostalgia match more than anything else. And it felt like that was the focus more than focusing really on Orton and Batista, although that's who really, did go over in the end.
How about you, Scott? Did you get the feeling at the time it felt like an odd usage of Rock, and more in retrospect, it seems like a much bigger match? Because you could argue, if you look at the legacy of the heading in, it didn't look like it was that high. But if you look at the legacy of the other matches on the card, like, you would rank this probably definitely above Brock Goldberg. And
yeah,
I mean, maybe above Eddie Angle. I mean, you could argue this is the second biggest match on the card legacy wise, if not the first. You could argue actually it's the most important match on the card in legacy retrospect, looking back 10 years later, 11 years later, that it could have been the most important match on the card.
I mean, especially considering what happened to the guy that wins the main event. I mean, right. If it wasn't for that, we might look at it differently, but you could definitely make that argument.
Just to see Rock and Flair interact, I mean, two of the greatest showmen ever in a ring, and really never have any kind of interaction before this, was pretty epic for me. I thought that was pretty awesome. And it's Rock and Sock, man. I mean, they're just, they're a piece of that awesome 4-year run of the Attitude Era that we all, I mean, Jesus, the two of them put on a segment that was, what, like an 8-6 on Raw? I mean, it was one of the most ridiculous rated mm-hmm. segments in the history of the show, history of TV. And it definitely has grown on me. And the match itself, although longer than I thought. God, I forgot this match was over 17 minutes. It was pretty long. And I thought it was fine. I didn't feel there was any dead spots.
No, definitely.
The right team went over. I think Orton needed to get the pin on Foley here.
All right, let's talk about the match a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I thought Foley, he got a little bit of a tepid reaction. A good reception, but I thought Rock dwarfed him as far as pops go.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Fun brawl to start, cool dream match level stuff with Rocket Sock and Flair, like you said. Big test for Orton and Batista. Batista, though, was still awkward in the ring. Fun Rock and Flair stuff early, both guys working in their classic spots. I thought Flair's hair looked gross. Super stringy and
wet
down.
Yeah, it looked pretty awful. Yeah.
Foley gets Orton a big pop when they brawl on the floor. Rocket Sock dominate Orton. Fun spot where Flair does a woo in Rock's face and Rock just slaps him. Batista catches Rock on the floor to give Evolution control. The crowd is into Flair the most, I thought, of all these guys, including Foley and Rock. They were cheering him the most. Foley gets a hot tag, but Batista overpowers him after a flurry. Great chance for Orton and Batista to learn when you look at the three guys out there with them. And that's why I said I thought this is the most important match of the show. Orton whips Foley into the ring steps for a gross vintage bump for him. Foley takes a good beating with some comebacks mixed in. Evolution works very well as a team, helping each other out. Rock gets a fiery hot tag, but Flair knocks him down and tries the awesome people's elbow, where Rock pops up and hits the real one as the crowd's going crazy. Flair ties up the ref as Batista wipes out the Rock in the ring illegally. Foley has the match in the bag, but Orton sneaks in and hits an RKO to grab the win. Very fun match, a little choppy thanks to ring rust early from Rock and Foley, but I thought it was really fun to watch. Mega win for Orton and Batista, good comeback for Rock and Sock, and they get their standing ovation. So did you guys feel like Foley finally got his Mania match here?
Oh man, to me it seems so much less about Foley during the actual match. I think it was a great match. I just don't know if it was like a Mick Foley defining moment. And I think that's why he comes back again to try to do it again. Because I think it was the right finish, putting Orton over. But even watching this again, I almost forgot the finish of the match. And I was almost expecting The Rock and Foley to win and get their feel good moment and then proceed to their singles match down the road. But it really seemed like this match was about The Rock, and this match is about Flair. I mean, those are the two most over guys. Their interactions between each other, when The Rock does that, the Flair strut, and the Flair tries to do a Rock or people's elbow. I mean, those two interactions with each other were the two most over moments in the whole match, I mean, by far. So it almost, in a way, seemed like Foley was an afterthought. I mean, but if the match is great. I mean, the crowd was into it the whole time. And I mean, I think as far as him having a good WrestleMania match, sure, it just didn't feel like, entirely mixed moment. It felt just like a really awesome match that was really fun, but it was more about like The Rock and Flair and maybe even Orton and Batista, and Foley just kind of happened to be a part of it.
I agree there 100%, and especially like you said, the Flair and Rock stuff stole the show in a way, but and I thought just Flair overall was getting the most cheers of everyone. Like, I mean, the crowd loved him over even Rock and Foley. So it does backfire a little bit on Foley, but like you said, Claire, it's really just there to set up the singles match and the continuing putting over of Orton by Foley. So I think it continues. Scott, what were your kind of final and overall thoughts on the match?
Yeah, I agree with Claire 100%. I think you're taken aback by the fact, and we were in the crowd. I mean, we felt it, and we were even cheering Flair. I think Foley thought that he had a ready built crowd for him. That's his house, you know, and he didn't quite get it. So I think it's why he comes back. Mark, I think you're exactly right. But
yeah, he's like, oh, wasn't really what I was thinking. I'll try this again.
Oh, I thought you were continuing.
Oh, no, live, pal.
That was me being Mick Foley.
I was like, what are you going to do?
This is live, pal. Right. Sorry.
No, you're exactly right. Yeah, I think the emotion got overwhelming for us as an audience. That about Flair and Rock together. That was the thing that took me aback. It's like, wow, I just realized these two have never been in the ring together. Two of the greatest showmen ever. In the ring at one time, pretty awesome. And I remember sitting there and like watching Batista and going, he's still, like, I agree with you, JR, just still a little choppy, still kind of feeling his way. I mean, he's got all this tutoring in the ring, and at the time Orton was definitely ahead of him, but Orton was a different kind of worker than Batista was. But with all of this tutoring in the ring with him, three future, you know, bona fide Hall of Famers, you'd have thought he'd have been a little more ahead, but it didn't hurt.
If we had to predict next year's WrestleMania main event that night, I mean, I don't think we would mention Batista's name. I mean, he seemed like a big, good power guy who was improving, but he
Orton
wasn't.
Definitely was looked like the guy more than him.
Yeah, I mean, if you told me Orton was going to be in the main event next year, I wouldn't be shocked at all. It seemed like the direction they were absolutely going with him, actually. Absolutely.
The offense, but there are a lot of skeptics that think that perhaps you can't take it. How do you address those skeptics?
Well, the skeptics and all the people have a little bit of... Let me do this again.
Oh, it's live, Al.
Was he going to be the main event the following year at WrestleMania? yeah, no, just a great match.
We're live, pal.
It had, you know, different... The focus shifted mid-match, but still just a great match. And after that, Mean Gene kind of straightens himself up a bit.
Yes.
He quite disheveled earlier. And we have our 2004 WWE Hall of Fame class. The first Hall of Fame class since 1996.
Mm-hmm.
And they are.
It was in the Hilton Hotel, by the way.
Yes.
And do you have all the inductors there for you?
Inductors? I don't. I just have the inductees.
Oh, hang on. I'll let you handle this so I can take a breath. But I have all the information here, courtesy of Stephen J. Sutton. So...
Okay, there we go. Okay, and here we go. So our first inductee was Big John Studd, inducted by The Big Show. The Magnificent / The Rock, Don Morocco.
Just because he's big, too. Like,
I know, right?
Yeah. Like, let's get the other big guy.
You know what? This guy's going to die prematurely young, too, because of his size. So we'll have him introduce Big John Studd.
Yes. Big John Studd had been dead for almost 9 years. I think his son, who's now, I think, passed away too. His son inducted. Or,
who's going to induct him then? His grandson will accept?
Little John Studd.
Little John Studd. Mini Studd. The Magnificent Rock Don Morocco. He was inducted by Mick Foley. The guy who got the biggest pop of the night, the Hammer, Greg Valentine, inducted by his former manager, the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. And he mentions his father in his speech. One of the greatest NWA world champions of all time, Harley Race, inducted by his contemporary, Nature Boy Ric Flair. A guy we thought we'd never see in the Hall of Fame, and now we wonder why. Superstar Billy Graham, inducted by Triple H.
Sweet like chocolate cake.
Sweet like a German chocolate cake, that's right. Pete Rose.
That little nursery rhyme that Triple H wrote for him. It was like, he lifts plates, something, and he
lifts
and
barbell sweet like plates, chocolate he's sweeter cake. Than a German chocolate cake. Yeah, which is what he used to say, actually. Pete Rose, as we start the celebrity wing, Pete Rose inducted by Kane because Pete Rose ate three tombstones in three straight years. Sergeant Slaughter, inducted by WWE Hall of Famer Pat Patterson, who had the two of them had legendary matches in that building, Madison Square Garden. The Body, Jesse Ventura, inducted by Tyrell, his son. Of course, if you are an old school fan, you know that he always said hi to Tyrell and the rest of his kids.
Terry and Jade, where are they?
Exactly. The Junkyard Dog.
And Jeremiah, too.
I didn't realize Junkyard Dog thought that Road Dog was his brother or something based on this. Junkyard Dog, inducted by WWE Hall of Famer Ernie Ladd and accepted by his daughter. Tito Santana, Arriba, inducted by the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
Mm-hmm. WrestleMania and, 8 love.
There you go.
Is he required to say Arriba at his speech?
Arriba. Yes.
I don't care what you say, but to make sure you say Arriba.
Wear that old purple shirt you used to wear.
Arriba McIntyre.
And finally, Bobby the Brain Heenan, inducted by one of the guys that he used to manage back in old school AWA, Blackjack Lanza.
Good class. I liked the class a lot. It was really cool. It was an overloaded class. There was a lot of guys
very,
in retrospect.
Very 80s crew.
Very, very.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, in a way, you may look at it and think, you know, now may they all went overboard a bit because it ended up eating up a lot of guys in one class, but it made sense since they hadn't done it in a while, and it was WrestleMania 20. I loved it. I love Bobby and Jesse both going in. Goosebumps definitely in the arena when they were doing this, especially for Bobby when he references Gorilla in the video package from the night before.
That was tough. Tough.
So like you said, the Hall of Famers all come out a little bit long, but it was a good intermission fitting for WrestleMania 20. Clay, what'd you think of the class? Anyone you would have taken out of that group there?
Taken out. No, I think everybody's pretty deserved. Well, I don't know. I guess it depends on how sticklery you want to be about the Hall. It seems like their standards are pretty loose. I mean, not everybody in there is like an amazing worker per se, but everyone had their impact in their own way. I mean, and a lot of them, like Junkyard Dog, most of his best stuff was before the WWF. So, but at this point, they own everything. I think they even do here in 2004. So it's already becoming more of like a wrestling Hall of Fame than just a WWF Hall of Fame.
Right.
And considering that, I think everyone's pretty appropriate. It's the celebrities are always a stretch, but if anyone deserved it, it's Pete Rose because he had a lot of three WrestleMania appearances. It's probably more than most of the guys that get in.
And very synonymous with it, too, with the 3 years in a row, with the stuff he did. Valentine with the big pop was awesome, too. He looked surprised.
This is the first time I realized how like poor health Bobby was in too. Just kind of hearing his when he was talking, you can hear him his voice starting to go
without a doubt. So very really sad. Cool what segment there. Yep, very good segment.
Yes. Next up, we get our first legit like fluff match of the show. Our first of not back to back.
This might actually have more behind it than the tag match, honestly.
Yeah, that's true too. We have our Playboy co-playmates. They were both individual Playboy playmates, and this time around, share the cover, and that is Tori Wilson and Sable, taking on the team of Stacey Keibler and another Tough Enough alum, Jackie Gata, in a Playboy evening gown match. We do have background, JR.
Yeah, amazingly enough, we do.
Background.
After Tori and Sable were chosen for the yearly Playboy cover, Jack and Stacey began claiming they were the hotter divas and that they should be the cover girls. On the 223 Raw, Jack and Stacey put on a little dance performance for Vince, and he granted them the match here so they could prove that Hugh Hefner made the wrong choice. And, of course, this is Sable's final pay-per-view appearance. End of a long, interesting road. She had a good comeback, I thought. Still hot. Never thought she would have this
and
running.
Sable!
And me!
That's her best moment.
Easily. But she's been much better than you would have expected here. And I almost forgot that she even lasted this long into 04. But here she is. So she'll leave, obviously, for reasons we'll get to later why she takes off. And I don't think, has she ever been back on?
Not as far as I know.
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so either.
Tori's smoking hot as always, pushing the Playboy cover still. Stacey and Jackie de facto heels. Sable turns it into a lingerie match. Cole and Taz are calling this match. They get there's three interbrand matches. They get the shakiest one of the three. JR and King get the other two. But they have a lot of fun with it. Jackie doesn't want to strip, so Tori and Sable do it for her. Hot stuff with the four of them in their underwear. Pointless, gratuitous, perfect TNA. Good quick levity for a heavy card. The crowd's loving it. Playboy girls win. And I thought it was just fine TNA here. It's very quick. All four were very attractive, so no complaints overall, and I thought it was pretty fitting on this card to have one of these matches. So no complaints out of me, even though it was a pretty big waste of time.
Yeah, I mean, from a card perspective, you probably could have saved the 2.5 or almost 3 minutes, but whatever. It was 2:41.
You're already going super fucking long at this point. I mean, three minutes isn't going to shave anything off.
No, and not
you kinda,
really.
You kind of need stupid bullshit like this, I mean, to break up a card with so many actual matches, I guess.
Right, at least have them be hot, you know?
Yeah, and particularly these last two matches were very storyline-driven, very heavy, deep. So now we've got, you know, some killer fluff, and, you know, the ladies that are at Mania could leave and the guys could have their moment for a few minutes, and the match was fine for what it was. They were half naked and Jack Doan rolled around with them and kind of got the reputation of the diva ref.
Yep.
And that was it. So there you go.
Never heard him referred to as that, but he is.
Yeah.
If you go historically, Jack Doan pretty much was like the guy who always ref the diva matches. It's pretty much just him. If you look through all these pay-per-views.
I'm going to stay up reading history of WWE.com all night just to confirm that.
Yeah, well, it won't be you. It'll probably
see,
be
I
else.
Get your plugs in too.
There you go.
I'm helpful around here.
Yes,
sometimes. Awesome Benoit and Eddie segment backstage next, where Eddie gets Benoit all fired up. Benoit brings passion and heat about this being his night. I thought it was really well done. It was quick, to the point, and effective.
Yep, definitely. Next up, our next title match of the evening. The WWE Cruiserweight Championship is on the line in a Cruiserweight Open.
Mm-hmm.
So another match to get a bunch of guys a check. Your Cruiserweight champion, as JR mentioned, is Chavo Guerrero. He is champion coming in. Your guys, we'll talk about the guys that had already in the company. Jamie Noble, Sho Funaki, Nunzio, Kidman, who doesn't have fleas, with his great music that makes no sense. Makes no sense. Rey Mysterio, Tajiri, and we have a debut and a departure.
Shannon Moore.
Shannon.
And who's, don't forget, Tajiri's got a buddy.
He does have a buddy,
yes,
Akio.
Akio.
Yes.
Yes.
I don't remember at all. I just completely blacked him out.
Yeah, that one I forgot about till I watched the match. But we do have a debut and a departure all at the same time.
Yes. Ultimo Dragon. It's his first and last appearance. Dragon was a lucha legend, spent his early years perfecting his craft in Mexico. In 1996, he joined WCW, received a good push and run as he won multiple championships, and was always the cornerstone of the lower mid-card title divisions. In 1998, he suffered from an arm injury, and the subsequent surgery left him with nerve damage. Many pundits throughout his career would be in serious danger. Thought his career would be in serious danger. He would return to Japan, where he began promoting and training, but in 2002, he had follow-up surgery that would allow him to resume his active career. At that time, WWE came calling and Dragon inked a deal in 2003. After a good debut, Dragon's run quickly sputtered out, and he became an afterthought, barely appearing on TV until shortly before the show. Rumors at the time claimed Stephanie McMahon actually wanted him to remove his mask because she thought he was too handsome to wear it. He was released shortly after the show and completed his dreams of wrestling at WrestleMania in Madison Square Garden at the same time. Since leaving, WWE Dragon continued to compete around the world, mainly working in Japan and Canada. Trained by Kotetsu Yamamoto and Gran Hamada, started training in 1987. Debut match was teaming with Black Man and Kung Fu, lost to Espanto Jr., Negro Casas, and Ricky Boy at a UWA show. Mm-hmm. Former two-time Cruiserweight champ, former two-time TV champ in WCW as well. So there you go there. This match came
quite
about
the resume.
And, of course, he had the 8 titles, if remember, he carried those around in WCW a lot.
Yes, he did.
Yep. A real mainstay of the Cruiserweight division there. On the 226 SmackDown, Rey Mysterio, Jamie Noble, Nunzio, and Billy Kidman faced off to determine who would face Chavo at Mania. During the match, we saw Tajir and his henchmen were up to no good talking to Paul Heyman. A few minutes later, Heyman came out and stopped the match, saying there was no Japanese representation in the bout, and that could lead to racial discrimination issues. Heyman then announced that any Cruiserweight that wanted a shot at the title should just show up at WrestleMania and enter in an open, which was the new match he made up for the pay-per-view. All the Cruiserweights would face off in different tag bouts over the next 2 weeks, building up that anyone had the chance to take the title. Continuing the mid-card lull in the show here, match to get everyone on the card once again. Interesting match setup where everyone gets an entrance. Chavo Sr. still awesome. Good mix of talent on paper. Debut of Ultimo Dragon with lots of hype and excitement. Akio gets in, but not Sakota, which is odd. Shannon Moore, bland without Hardy, just kind of useless. Rey dressed as Flash in this year's tribute to a superhero. Dragon and Moore start. Good pace, really blowing through the spots. Dragon gets a quick win. Noble and Dragon are next. Noble jumps from behind, gets a couple good spots, but Dragon taps out. It looks kind of weak at his first and only pay-per-view. Noble eliminates Funaki immediately. Nunzio Noble's next. Good for Nunzio to get a pay-per-view slot. Lots of reversals. He gets some near falls, but Noble hits a somersault senton to the floor off the top and gets the count-out win. Kidman and Noble is next, picking the feud right back up. Nunzio pulls Noble to the floor. Kidman gets a springboard shooting star press and almost dies in the meantime while he's doing it. A crazy spot and a bump. Kidman survives a Dragon sleeper and hits a BK bomb for the win. Ray and Kidman go next. And this is a great match. It could have stolen the show if they had more time, if they ever got their own singles match. Gets off to a hot start. Akio attacks Ray, but he stays alive. Ray gets a sunset flip powerbomb out of the corner to pin Kidman. Ray and Tajiri's next. Tajiri gets a tarantula. Ray hits a 619. Tajiri sprays Akio by accident. Ray rolls him up. Akio can't compete because he's blind. Tajiri kicks Ray in the head before he leaves. And then we get the final, which is Ray Chavo, which probably just should have been the match to begin with. Ray takes out Chavo Sr. with a somersault senton. Chavo blocks the West Coast Pop and uses leverage from Sr. to roll Ray up for the win. Probably should have been one-on-one here with Ray winning, but they wanted to continue things on. Chavo continues to cheat to win. Fine concept, but way too rushed. And it's actually a pretty super deep division. This could have been a classic. And I think it's a match they should have saved for like a SmackDown-only show when they needed to fill time. It probably could have been better used if they had like 25 minutes.
Give this thing 30 minutes and it's awesome.
Right. Instead of a series of two-minute matches.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you have so much talent here. I think they just wanted, again, to continue Vince's, in our opinion, Vince's thought of just giving guys, you know, paychecks. But that's fine. I mean, at least it was better than another, you know, it wasn't a fluff match by any stretch. It was very entertaining. It could have been longer, you know, in a couple months at Great American Bash or whatever.
Especially with the storyline that, like, Paul Heyman of calling it an open, it makes even less sense that Matt Hardy wouldn't, even at the last minute, once his match is canceled, say, oh, I just lost weight. I just got down to light, you know, cruiserweight, and I'm putting myself in the match. I mean, considering the fact everyone got pinned in like, 30 seconds anyway, I don't see how it would have mattered if he was in it. But small complaint, I guess.
I mean, Kidman and Ray could have just been awesome if that was a match. Even if you want to do a three-way with Chavo, too, if he's going to
they ever there. Have, like, a real match, a pay-per-view match?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, that's a match I want to see.
Yeah.
I mean, they wrestled in WCW a bunch.
I think they've tag-teamed together.
Yeah, they were tag-teamed.
They were the champs, right?
Yep.
Yeah, but I don't think they ever worked together at WWE. But, yeah, this is it was good for what it was, 10.5 minutes, you know. These guys all could have gotten more time if they needed it, but this match.
Keo got screwed. That's bullshit. He never.
The show was going to end by Wednesday if they added any more stuff. So
the ref can just decide he's blind and can't wrestle. I mean, I don't know. It didn't seem right to me. I wanted to see a Keo in action personally.
Ah, Keo. So there you go. Chavo Guerrero retains his cruiserweight championship. All right, guys, we're halfway through. JR, thoughts to this point?
Started really hot. But now we've kind of tapered with the Hall of Fame segment, the women's match, and this cruiserweight. You could feel like a real sag in the show right now. And this is when that 4.5 hours starts to feel really daunting when you're here.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, man, is the show going to get back hot again? Or are we going to keep kind of limping for a while?
Yeah. Claire, what are your thoughts? First six matches so far.
Yeah, I mean, for a long show, I mean, I think it's already been as long as like most pay-per-views are now at this point, but I think they do a good job of mixing everything up. I didn't really feel like it was dragging when watching it back, and I know we didn't feel like it was dragging when we were there live, because you know, we were probably shit-faced by that point, 2.5 hours into the show. but yeah, no, I mean, all the matches are short, I mean, or as short as they you know can be, I guess, and anything that's not really good and isn't amazing isn't bad, because it's not offensively long. They keep everything quick, they keep moving through the card, and you know, it's basically like we've been saying, it's a get everybody on the show, get everybody's appearances in, and that's what they're doing effectively. And there, you know, we're still got a lot of the meat coming. So I think for what is a very, very long undercard, it's been pretty good, unoffensive if nothing else. I mean, the Rock Foley match was amazing. I mean, that's just especially live. I mean, you can't even describe how into the match that crowd we were. I mean, every move, everything that Rock and Flair did. I mean, that was just like that's WrestleMania moments right there. That's the kind of stuff that this is all about. And that match was a perfect summation. So that's my match of the top half of the card anyway.
I would have maybe. What do you think about before we go to break? What do you think about sticking the Playboy match in between Christian Jericho and the handicap?
That might have made more sense instead of stacking those two matches and then going super filler here with the Hall of Fame, the women, and this cruiserweight. Unless they didn't look at the cruiserweight like filler, but it definitely was.
Yeah. So, all right, why don't we take a break? Because there was no old school. One thing this show didn't have was an old school intermission. So, and when we come back, we've got six more matches to go, many more titles on the line, some epic, weird, bizarro crowd actions from us at the Garden for a match, and much more. But first, many, many words, like many, many minutes on this show. Because?
Oh, it's live, Hal. Sorry.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following. What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, join Marcus Vandenberg and myself for the world's most dangerous sports show and the program that's changing the game one show at a time, the Kings of Sport Podcast. Available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscolo and I talk everything from the big four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Hey, this is Dr. Tom Pritchard, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey there, Nation. This show's going pretty long, so what we're going to do here is break this into two parts for you. If you're on placetobenation.com, you can go ahead and click the link right in this very post. If you're listening on iTunes, part two will start right now.